Amateur Presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Review. I am at TIFF24 with one of your hosts, Matt Roerbeck, alongside, oh, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Majin.
Matt, I think that Raza Mocha ad is just getting to me. You.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds and, oh God,
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
If you've been to TIFF this year,
I've never
seen
two people more dead inside.
they're just doing their jobs.
I know, but it's so bad.
I mean, we'll talk about more about this on the kind of like wrap episode, because I think that's when we usually talk about the ads and the different little memes that come through during the festival. But yeah,
I miss the key light days.
God, that ad was. I want to do like a retrospective of all the different like TIFF ads that have happened and things like that, because that L'Oreal ad is iconic. There's the Lily, how will you live?
Yeah, the RBC stuff. And then there was like Uncle Morty at one point.
Yeah, and, I want to just go through.
We'll
and,
get
like,
through this.
Yeah, I kind of want to go through and just find, like snippets in time, Eric. Maybe they're out of order. Maybe we're not remembering them in the right order. And they're just like.
It's like you're referring to a plot of a movie we're going to review, but I'm not sure if that is the proper segue.
It is.
Are we talking about the Christie ad?
Yeah, exactly. We are reviewing We Live in Time, starring Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. And the director is
John Crowley, who directed Boye, which also has Andrew Garfield in one of his first major roles, which he was great in, and that's probably his best movie. And John Crowley also directed Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay, cool.
But he also directed the horrible The Goldfinch, which played Tiff.
Yeah. Good Lord.
So this is his follow-up from The Goldfinch.
I guess it's a step up from that. But Eric, how are you doing?
Well, I just told you, I've seen the Raza Mocha ad many, many times, and I'm just trying to...
It's more traumatizing than a wife with cancer. Hey, my wife had cancer. I can joke about that.
Well, I'm not touching that with a 40-foot
ball. No, let's just get into it. We're going to review We Live in Time.
Yes.
It's day 9, I think, day 8. We've reviewed 3 movies, and... We literally just hit end on Heretic, and I was like, let's just get into
Let's get another A24 film right out of the way. So,
where do you want to start with this one? So,
Should we start at the beginning, the middle, or the end? I mean, it's non-linear, you know?
And I think that's my biggest issue with the movie. So, overall, I think the movie is okay. I think, like we expected, the performances are solid. I think Garfield and Pugh are even great. I think they have wonderful chemistry together. I think they make the movie work as well as it can. I think from a personal aspect, I just made a joke about it, but like I think the movie is effective in what it's doing, but I feel like that's sort of cheap, because I think it's an easy thing to kind of get people with in its subject matter.
Well, it's a manipulative tearjerker, and you know, there's this kind of movie doesn't get a theatrical release much anymore. It's mostly limited to streaming, unless it has big enough stars in it.
It does feel like those kind of Netflixy kind of.
But it is an independent
Nicholas
studio
Sparks kind of thing.
Yeah, which is also very manipulative and almost exploitative in the
it's
way.
It's probably
that
like
movies.
Elevated Nicholas Sparks, maybe, but like kind of in that. I don't want to shit on anything, but yeah, that's kind of...
Yeah, but and you can shit on Nicholas Sparks. He knows what he did. He's made a cottage industry out of, like, having characters that are dying horribly of cancer and
that's,
you know,
I think,
Alzheimer's.
Is,
and just making you cry and then pay $30 for a ticket.
Exactly,
But with this, I think, like, its intentions are, I guess, sincere enough, but it does still play heavily on... You know, the sick spouse and the idea of seeing the relationship at different times and, you know, how it evolves and how we grow as people. But, yeah, I think the obvious thing to say here is that Florence Pugh, Andrew Garfield, they're both very good actors.
Great
they're at
chemistry.
A time in their career where, you know, they can do anything right now. And I think they would be pretty much good in most material, and here I think they add a little bit more than maybe what the script has, and that's the biggest problem with the non-linear aspect, because when you look at this, it's like, well, if you took the non-linear component out of it
and it was just in chronological order,
it would just be a fairly plain middle of the road love story. which is fine, but because they're putting it out of order, it feels like there's this extra gimmick to the whole plot where it's like we're selling you on, oh, this is...
But the gimmick's not even the point.
I know, but this is groundbreaking or new or fresh. Is it? And it's not. No, it's not. Well, I had the same problem with Strange Darling.
Yes, it made me think of that. I haven't seen Strange Darling yet, but how you were describing it is exactly how I felt during this movie, where you're like... It's jumping around so often and without any semblance of like structure that it just ripped me out of each moment when I was finally starting to be in that
to settle
moment.
And be there and, with the characters and present in the scene.
And it would rip you out, and it's jumping ahead in time. It's jumping back in time. It's in the present day. It's in the past. And each scene, you don't even get a break between them. Like, I love chapter-based storytelling. I love non-linear storytelling. But there kind of has to be either a reason for it, or there needs to be a structure to it that at least feels like there's thought put in.
Well, it's cohesive within its own framework, right?
And I think what they're trying to do, I was talking with Nevis about this, is like... I get that when you're looking back on your life or maybe a past relationship or something like that, maybe you don't think of it in chronological order and you're just getting bits and pieces of it here.
Well,
that's
how memory works.
That's
right?
What I mean. So I think that's essentially what they're
but
going
we don't even
for,
know whose memory or perspective this is from, because it's two characters.
Yeah.
Like if it was from the point of view of one of them and we were seeing it.
But you're seeing
it
both from Garfield and Pugh's perspective.
So it just feels like a series of scenes that are strung together out of order that, you know, just jump back and forth to overall tell a story that doesn't cohesively come together in any real meaningful way, except that the performances are enough to make you feel something for the characters, even though you don't really know much about them other than, you know, what the film is telling you, which is, you know, Florence Pugh is this amazing chef.
Michelin star chef.
And Andrew Garfield works for Weetabix, which I did kind of find funny. And in terms of, like, where they are and the ups and downs. And, you know, I think...
He's recently divorced, but then they get together.
Yeah.
And
conversations about having children and when you should have that in the relationship and how you should approach these things. And like, all of that stuff, I think... is fine, but it just doesn't feel like anything we haven't seen already done in better movies.
Before,
it's just that, oh, we have two really good actors who can make this material serviceable.
And that's serviceable is kind of the perfect word.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that it's competent, it's acted well.
An easy recommend. You can easily recommend this to almost anybody. Like, it's not like a film where you're like, you know, we'll be talking about Queer once you see it, but I don't think, like, that's a film you could recommend to anybody but film fans.
Yeah.
You know, people
This is very accessible. Yeah. It'll work, I think, for most people. Like, I'm not shitting on anyone who will enjoy it. It's just for me personally, like, I think the non-linear element was just my biggest frustration. It's just that...
But even the characters, I don't think, are that well thought out or developed. Like, there's only maybe, like, one or two scenes that feel like these are people and not just, you know, sort of archetypes that we've seen before, where, you know, somebody is at one point in their life when we first see them and they're down and, you know, they're looking for something and it's a weird kind of meet
cute.
They
find their spark because they find this person and then, but like, I think the way that the movie, again, going back to it, just to hammer it home, is like, I think it undercuts some of the emotion, right? Because you start with you know, her cancer relapsing, but then it goes back to the beginning, but then goes back to when she first had cancer, and then, oh, they have a kid, and, like, all this kind of stuff, and, like I'm kind of hammering down my point, but, like, it just, every time it just ripped me out, and I felt like it undercut any of that emotion. Mind you, I still was emotional watching the movie, but I was projecting my own relationship and my own love for my wife onto the movie. And I did say it, and I don't know who's listening, if people know, but, like, my wife did have thyroid cancer, and, like, she didn't have to do chemo or any of that kind of stuff. She just had to have surgery, and but it was a very scary time, and, you know, I'm not trying to make it about me, but, like, it was mostly about her. But, like, I'm projecting all that onto the movie.
Well, you were able to connect with it.
I was afraid during that time.
And be empathetic towards the situation.
Yeah, and you always worry that it'll come back or any of that stuff. So all of these things in the movie, I was projecting onto my own life, which made me emotional watching it. But I didn't necessarily think it was because the movie was doing a good job with it. It was just because it was in the movie, yeah. Right? Like, that's the kind of emotionally manipulative stuff
on my end, as a yeah. cold-hearted single sure. man, I
who's never was, loved anyone.
Who's never loved anyone. I was only emotional seeing the talked-about horse in the carousel for less than a split second.
It was like two frames.
Two frames.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing what social media will amplify. And so, yeah, I think I admire just, like, the performances and, you know, it's fine. It's perfectly middle yeah. of the road. But it's like before where, you know, we can't recommend Megalopolis to anybody but sure. film fans. This is very easy to be. Like, if you're just looking for, like,
a romantic movie that will make you cry. Yeah, like, yeah. Then you're going
to... And if it's on Sunday afternoon on a streaming service, watch it then. You know, yeah. you don't need to see it theatrically, I don't think.
I'd agree with that. It's a good date movie.
Or if you want to sit with other people and have, like, that feeling of, you know, just being together in that moment in safe yeah. space of...
But it did remind me of, like, not as obviously comically bad as... you know the guy who does This Is Us? What's
yes.
his name? I forget.
But Dan, like, Fogelman?
Yeah. It reminded me kind of something like that, right? Like
yeah.
a This Is Us.
But there's
of
tons
thing.
Of
like,
these movies, right? Where like, there was a like film with Nicole Kidman and Michael Keaton in the mid to late 90s called My Life, which was about Michael Keaton's character being diagnosed with cancer and they have a child on the way.
Yeah.
But it's just told very straight. Nobody remembers it anymore. It's fine. The performances are really good in the movie.
Yeah.
But the movie itself
is just... And that's what we mean by we've seen this movie
yeah.
a lot, right? It's just a new version of that movie,
yeah.
right? Which is, again, it's serviceable. You know, I don't even have much more else to say. Like, just my biggest frustration was that the way it was told. And I think, you know, without that, then it probably, to your point, would just be even more kind of like, you know, at least you'll remember it because, like, oh, that was that movie that, like, jumped around and had.
Yeah, or, you know, you had two really great actors yeah. working together. And it just felt like, you know, these are two really good performances that maybe could have been in a better movie.
Yeah.
You know?
That's all I got to say.
I do too.
yeah. That was a quick one. Okay. You know, we could jump around and you know, through time and talk about different things, but I think we'll just leave it at that. Thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate it. Eric and I have been reviewing films throughout the entire festival, so we today already just recorded, which you can probably listen to, our review for the aforementioned Megalopolis, as well as Better Man and Heretic, but we also have reviews for Saturday Night, Anora, Conclave, The Life of Chuck,
Relay,
tons of stuff throughout the festival, and we'll be continuing to review stuff up until the end of TIFF and probably afterwards for the next couple weeks. So you're already in the right spot on all podcast services. You can also get the pod on YouTube as well as on Letterboxd, which is Untitled_Movies. If you want our kind of quick written reviews that we're doing after each of the screenings, you can go find those all on X or Twitter. You can follow me at Matt Rohrbeck and Eric at EM6211. And until next time.
I don't think I ever ate Weetabix that much as a kid.
What is Weetabix?
It's like a giant...
is it that giant rectangle of like...
and you have to put like sugar
It's like a
or,
giant mini wheat, right?
Yeah, fruit
is mini
on
wheat
it. Yeah.
Like a small Weetabix with frosting on it?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
I love mini wheats, so shout out to those.
Pushing big Weetabix.
The, you must be very regular is a funny joke.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye, everybody.